Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome
a scrumper.
Welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow! It's another beautiful day on the Wild Edible World podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Michael.
And I am Steve. We got a nice little show for you today.
Yep, we're keeping the ball rolling with our kind of forager interview series. I feel like we've been just kind of doing a lot of communicating with like all these incredibly talented people that are around us in the foraging community. And we are so lucky to be a part of a community that is really open to just like, you know,
because it's cold outside too, and because nobody's shown us how to hunt yet.
Podcasts are timeless, so who knows what the weather is really like, right? But we have with us today Sean Rao, who's a singer songwriter and wild food forager, host of the video series on YouTube, Can I Eat This? You can find him on Instagram at Can I Eat This Sean, spelled S-E-A-N. And we're just like really happy to have him here, man.
Yeah, thanks welcome, Sean. Here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You have a really cool series going on your Instagram right now, like all about walnuts. Have walnuts like played a really big part in your life previously?
Yeah, black walnuts. When I went to college kind of late. I was almost 30 when I went to college, and I'm from upstate New York. I grew up here, but I went to this college in Nelsonville, Ohio, in the middle of the Wayne National Forest, called Hocking College. And at that time, it was before I decided that I was going to do music full time. It was in a weird kind of stage of my life. I was just about 27, and I was considering becoming a ranger. Because, you know, like, being out in the woods and natural resources, just it's always been a part of my life, but I've never tried to make a living from it really at that stage. So I felt like, this is where I want to go, you know. And I found a really cool school called Hocking College out there. And if you're a naturalist, if you want to be like a ranger or work outside or outdoor education, all that kind of stuff, they do that there. And it's really unique program out there. So I went out there, and when I first got to the school, there were all of the black walnut was like the dominant tree planted on the campus. It was just everywhere, and I knew you could eat black walnuts. I knew what they were, but I had no experience using them or eating them. All I knew is that they were falling at the time that school started, and nobody was gathering them. They were just all over the place, and I just found one. I cracked it open right there on the spot, used a rock, I think. Nice. And opened it up, and the smell of it was so intriguing. I was like, there's nothing that smells like this, and nothing that smells like this. So my personality is with a lot of things is just like, I'm gonna figure this out on my own, and then I'll look it up, you know. Now I don't teach it that as like something to do with wild food, but it's mostly when I'm like putting together a bookshelf or something, and then I'll read the instructions after I come across a mistake that I, you know.
It's like the grip it and rip it foraging, you know.
Foraging. But I knew they were edible. I knew they were non-toxic. So I went ahead and I tried it, and all I could think is, this is going to go amazing in my cereal at the dorm. So I don't know what I was eating, some cheap cereal. And I just put the black walnuts in there, and they were raw. They weren't even cured. I had no idea of how to do any of that stuff at the time, but I was fascinated by it and I thought it was amazing. And so from that point on, every year I learned a little bit more about them. And fast forward to now, I mean, I've been, with the exception of 1 year, which was last season or the season before, we had almost no walnuts that fell, which is very strange. Oh. That's the only year I didn't have them. So pretty much every year since then, I've been eating them.
Pretty darn cool. That Hocking Hills area is just absolutely gorgeous. I have a couple friends out in that area. Yeah, it's beautiful. What a place to go to school, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really interesting and beautiful time. That's where I learned. I took a college course on dendrology, studied trees, and I was hooked. I didn't know that I was going to love that so much, but it taught me a lot. I still carry some of that stuff that I learned in that class today.
That's a sign of truly the sign of a great school. So black walnuts, was that the first thing you'd ever foraged, or is there a different ingredient? What was the first thing you think?
No, it wasn't the first thing. The first thing that I ever foraged, I'd say, was when I was a kid, I went to this school called the Tom Brown's Wilderness Tracking School. Because I was, like a lot of people at that time, this was the early 90s, and I was fascinated with, Tom's books and a lot of people that got into survival, and even those who end up teaching about other, like, sort of side subjects, like foraging. And, you know, if you came out of that era, you probably knew who Tom Brown was. And, with the books and the classes, it's a whole world unto itself. And so I got really hooked in that when I was a kid. And that first class that I took there, we foraged for burdock. I think that was my first one.
Nice.
And wow. Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, I can't say that I'm in love with burdock, but... I was amazed at how you could forage for something so substantial. You know, it's not like a dandelion green that mm-hmm. you're just nibbling on. It's like a substantial starch source of food, you know? So that kind of opened my mind to like what was possible out there.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a pretty impactful plant to have as your first time.
Yeah, that's
because,
huge.
Yeah, well, it's massive,
literally,
and you see it everywhere. So that's really cool and affirming.
Yeah, it's so massive, and I didn't. We had a good instructor there, an herbalist that was Karen Sherwood. Her name was. She was really an ethnobotanist and. An herbalist, and she was a good teacher to have as your first like guide through that kind of world. But yeah, it is. You know, if that's going to be your first plant to taste, there's no mistaking the flavor, right? It's just so it's powerful, it's strong, mm-hmm. it's rich. You know, it's not carrot. It's not like a parsnip even. It's just it has its own kind of flavor to it.
For sure.
So I looked up Tom Brown because I actually didn't recognize who you were talking about.
Okay, yeah.
The Field Guide to Wild Edible and Medicinal Plants, it shows best-selling wilderness series. Seems pretty cool. I might check that out.
Yeah, I think, honestly, the best one was his first two books. He's written some, novel books, but also he has a set of field guides. And I think if there was two books of his that stand out, it's his very first book called The Tracker. That's his novel. That's about his life. But the other one would be Field Guide to Living with the Earth. That's literally the first book I've ever found of his. And that got me hooked.
Around what age would you say? It's got some
very usable information in it.
Yeah, that looks really cool.
yeah, man, it's very cool.
How old do you think you were when you first discovered this stuff?
I was 17. I was in Florida visiting my father, who lived out there at the time, and I was just in this New Age bookstore, and I came across this book, and it was like exactly what I wanted to learn, you know, wilderness survival and indigenous knowledge and, you know, all that stuff. I was just fascinated.
Yeah. And I think the phrasing of the title, Living with the Earth, is pretty, I don't know. Yeah, it's important.
To draw for sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just the title and what it alludes to is so far removed from like the idea of, you know, going out in the wilderness and being rescued or something. It's like the antithesis of all of those Hollywood shows, you know.
Sure.
Of the Naked and Afraid and the push to like conquer nature and all of that.
Yes.
Dominion over, you know, all that stuff is just so tiresome and so sensationalized that I naturally gravitated away from all of that stuff. I wanted to be, you know, like I have this kind of a joke of like, you know, the Naked and Afraid approach as opposed to like, you know, a clothed and comfortable.
Yeah.
Well fed and clothed, you know. That's me. That's why like it was a tough sell to like think about a wild food show that would be like entertaining enough to watch, because I felt like, yeah, this is gonna be me, you know, going around strolling along and pulling stuff off the ground and maybe just, you know, finding some tree nuts, and yeah, I'll have somebody with me, and we'll just film it all. You know, it just sounds like, oh, okay, where's the conflict?
You know? Right. Yeah. No, there's always got to be some drama or something else.
Yeah.
But I think the perspective that you take, especially just the, I don't know, I find a lot of the Venn diagram between like music and nature is very, very close to being a circle. And the fact that you're able to incorporate these two things simultaneously in your show, I think is very cool, because you usually take like other musicians out with you, right?
Yeah, well, that was the premise of the show, was to have a musician guest on the show. And, you know, probably 9 times out of 10 when we're scheduling the guests, they don't have forage for something before. They're not like active foragers. So part of it is that I wanted the audience to be able to see through their eyes of somebody coming brand new to this stuff. You know, they are just sort of like immersed in this world that they are not familiar with, and that in and of itself is, I think, interesting. It's like, you know, experiencing things for the very first time, and the reactions and the realizations that you can get from that is what I wanted to convey in a show like this. So it was beneficial, actually, that the artists that are guests on the show usually don't have prior knowledge of, you know, the craft.
Yeah, I think that makes it even better, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a super useful tool for education, too. Yeah, bringing somebody in that is presumably at the same level of experience as the viewer, and trying to, yeah, just, you know, share that knowledge with everybody there. But, yeah, I think I saw one where you did Nanny Berries.
Yeah.
That one was really cool to see. It's, you don't hear people talking about Nanny Berries very, very much.
Yeah, that was the second episode. That was a lot of fun to shoot. And yeah, I was introduced to Nanny Berries from Samuel Thayer, who you know well. He was such an inspiration, yes, he was. But when his first book came out, I was just, my eyes were opened when I read that book, and I just couldn't believe what I was reading and how no other source at the time seemed to talk about this stuff in the depth that he did and the way that he covered the information. So I ended up taking classes with him before he got to be like the legend. Zeppelin of wild food.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And And, you know, it was, yeah, he opened my eyes to a lot of things, wild food, and Nanny Berries was one of them. And I guess it's an acquired taste. I mean, to me, they're just absolutely delicious, and I crave them, but not everybody likes them, I noticed, when I'm feeding them to them. They're just, I think they're so surprised at, you know, you make the mistake, or I don't know if it's a mistake, but I sometimes will say banana because it is aromatic like a banana.
Yes.
And it does have the banana consistency. And I think I picked that up from Sam. I think he said that. But it's one of those things that you can't really, there's nothing else really like it, right? It's you wanna draw a comparison to something else. You always do, right? But it's hard to do that with Nanny Berry.
It can be, yeah, that difficulty is common with, like, a lot of wild foods when it's, like, yeah. Like, describing the taste of a pawpaw to somebody, and it's, like, well, yeah. It's, like,
yeah.
Banana, but it's, like, better than any banana I've freaking had, so yeah, it seems almost sure. Insulting sometimes.
Go ahead.
You just try to draw people to some sweet conclusions and, like, make it seem enticing, but a lot of the times those expectations can set you back because they, they expect cultivated fruit. That's not what that is.
I think you're right, and I think also when you say the word berry, it just brings up this connotation that it's going to be juicy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the wrong thing to call it. They should have come up with something else because it definitely is not what you would think of as a berry, and it's not juicy at all, but it's definitely sweet, aromatic for sure.
Maybe Nanny Droop, but that sounds
that sounds very sad.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't sound good at all.
I don't want to put that in my mouth. You know,
what's wrong with you kids? You got the Nanny Droop?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the Nanny Jew, Papa.
Oh, my God. I love that it's the kids.
Yeah. kids these days.
Oh, boy.
Definitely. It's getting cold over in New York. You said you're waiting for some snow earlier before we started recording. Are you out foraging anything right now, or is there...
I probably have the last of the acorns I want to gather.
Nice.
I mean, it's, you know how it is. I mean, when you have a bumper crop, it's so tempting to gather more than you can actually process.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just the act of getting out there, which is, I think a lot of people don't realize this, but it's like, it brings up a whole different topic, a whole different discussion, I think, of the nature of work when you actually really love the work itself, you know, like. Harvesting is, even though that takes time, I don't consider that work because it's fun. You know what I mean? It's super fun to get out there and you're dreaming about all the things you're going to make with it. And it's just such a rewarding activity in and of itself. And then you get to take the stuff home and process it, you know, but I run the risk of, you know, like, over harvesting and not being able to, you know, process what I want. But with acorns, it's even harder than that because they store so well if you process them correctly. And so you can make the case for saying, well, I'll get to this like in 6 months.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You could do that if you have the space and you have the know-how to store the stuff. But yeah, it was a great crop for white acorns here and red oak for sure, but the white oak I haven't gathered in a couple years because they haven't been falling in abundance here, and it does seem, you know, it's a chunk of years and then you get the bumper crop and then it's just like sort of like here and there. But you know, with the white oaks, some people don't know this, that they white oak will germinate as pretty much as soon as it falls. So you got a pretty short window of time to harvest them as opposed to the red oak that you can just like kind of lazily wait, you know, weeks and weeks, and they're still on the ground even when the snow comes. And, you know, so I've been getting the last of the red oaks, I should say. But mostly, I've been processing stuff indoors.
You get any? You get any late season apples out there this time of year?
You know what? I didn't harvest that many apples this year. It wasn't that great here. For the wild apples, as I thought it would be, because pretty much all the nut trees were amazing, but for apples here, it wasn't as good as I was hoping for. But I was also, it's a little challenging too, because I also tour and with music, for music. So sometimes I miss my window, you know, of harvest for that stuff. But yeah, it's been, where did I get? So hickories, both pignuts and shagbarks. I'm pretty stocked up with those. And, of course, the acorns I mentioned. I did a lot of I found a lot of maitake mushrooms this year.
Yeah, which, that was going to be my follow-up question.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you this, man. What's been blowing my mind is making jerky with them. Mm-hmm. I can't believe how good it turns out. It's better than anything I've tried in the store. And I'll do that. I'll try the analogs from the store. In other words, like the things that closely resemble what you're harvesting, just mm-hmm. to see if I'm in the ballpark. Like, I've tried mushroom jerky, and I think that the kind that I made at home was so much better. Using maitakes, and granted, I haven't really used any other mushroom except I tried with chanterelles, and that was a disaster.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what. I don't know if it's because they were frozen first, and then I thawed them out, and then I dehydrated them, seasoning them first. But they were super bitter and weird, like that. But
oh. Was not expecting that.
Yeah, me either.
No, I don't know. I don't know what that was about. Of course, I boiled them first, and then I dehydrated them. But they were so very strange, like weird aftertaste. So I can't quite explain that. It's not a terribly empirical experiment either, because I only did it once. But
why would you do it again?
I would do it. Next year I will try, but I will try with fresh ones that I then boil and then season and without freezing, because I wonder if the freezing has something to do with that. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
But I will say the other thing I did was I was in a rush with these maitakes. I had so much, and I was in a rush, and I was going away on tour. So I cooked up what I had, and then I saved the rest in the freezer. They were boiled first, and then I put them in the freezer. And I meant to do more of the jerky with them. And so when I got back home from tour, it was like the first thing I did, and I made jerky, but I let them in the dehydrator too long. I was like, oh man, snap. they're like, and they weren't burnt or anything, but they were just crispy. And I'm like, wait a minute, man, this is like bacon. This tastes like bacon to me. So they're like super crispy and salty, but delicious. And now I have bacon maitake mushrooms. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now I'm sad I didn't do that with my maitakes this year.
Yeah, I mean,
I want maitake bacon.
Next year, try it.
Yeah, definitely. Maitake bacos.
Yes.
Right. I tested it on my son too. I was like, dude, he's 12 now. And you know, I take him foraging with me once in a while, and I have to secretly kind of, like, he loves it, but if I tell him what we're going to do, he'll say no until we're out there. I'm like, what do I got to get you to eat this? Like, I will pay you $5. Please eat this piece of mushroom bacon. And you know, he's not a mushroom fan, so it's going to take money. But when he does, he's like, oh, wow, that was actually pretty good. I'm like, do you want more? He's like, no, I'm good.
I do not.
But hey, at least I got him to try it.
We'll take his share over here.
Yeah, right. Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow.
Sigh.
What's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just realized this mushroom supplement I bought isn't actually made with mushrooms. It's made with something called myceliated grain?
Myceliated grain?
Oh, no!
I'm sorry to tell you, buddy, but myceliated grain is a sure sign of a poor quality mushroom supplement.
Well, dang. I wanted mushrooms, not brown rice. What should I do?
Well, you should support a small batch producer from right here in the Midwest, Keweenaw Apothecary.
Keweenaw Apothecary? Tell me more.
Keweenaw Apothecary specializes in high-quality mushroom extracts from Michigan, and they always use real mushrooms, never, never, never myceliated grain.
That sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Where can I order?
Well, you can find them at keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. That's K-E-W-E-E-N-A-W, apothecary.etsy.com. Be sure to read their many excellent reviews.
Thanks, buddy. I don't want no low-quality mushroom products from a factory. I want Keweenaw Apothecary.
Wowie, wow! So professional musician by day, forager by night. Do you have any foraging songs?
Well, it'd be the opposite, but...
Oh, forager by day, musician by night. Okay,
yeah,
Batman.
Yeah. Probably work out better.
You're right, yeah, better show times.
Yeah. Yep.
So, foraging songs?
Yeah, not really. I think, I mean, I will just sing nonsense songs when I am foraging, or like a song will come to me and I will just sing it. But in terms of like putting, you know, writing songs about plants, it's just, I don't know that I am the right person to do that kind of material. I don't think that's my wheelhouse, as they say.
Well, right on. Good for you for knowing your limits.
Yeah. However, speaking of Sam Thayer, you ever hear Sam's songs?
Oh yeah. Yeah, the rice the rice, like, my wife's got rice knockers.
Yeah.
Eating off a basswood.
Right.
I've been very lucky to hear a couple of his performances.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
It's hard. You know, it's so funny. Whenever I saw his picture in the books, I thought he was going to be kind of a dry person. And he is, as you know, he is one of the biggest personalities, one of the funniest people I've ever met.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just, it's almost like I don't know if he's human. Because I don't know that one person can do all of those things well to the level that he does. I mean, it's kind of a joke at this point. Like his TikTok will be like all of these amazing foraging videos, right? That he just kind of throws together. The fact that he's even on that platform is hilarious in and of itself, because it's like, he does not need to be, you know, and nobody ever thought he would. But when he did, all of a sudden, you know, of course, you know, he has a lot of recognition for it, because the material is so good.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people didn't know how funny he was.
Yes.
And I appreciate that about him a lot. I appreciate his tangents that he goes on.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
And
yes.
And you, I mean, he reins it in on the books, but even in the books, one of the things that I really love about his books is that there's that narrative piece to them that, not all books do well if they have it in at all, you know? So
You know, that's what I realized, like, set his field guides back in the day, like his first three books, that that's really what sets them apart until you set it. It's the narrative body that he gives it. That's so good.
Yeah, I've always come, anytime he had a new book coming out, I'd always look forward to that because I knew that those stories were going to be so delicious, you know? And
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like when I see reviews sometimes of like, just give me the facts, you know what I mean? It's like people forget how we remember this stuff. How do you think like this stuff stays in our brains? It's because of stories, you know what I mean? It's because of how this stuff was passed down. That's how people remembered it, you know? They didn't have field guides, you know, when 1,000 years ago, you know, and the learning of this stuff was very, very different, you know. So I think the way that he puts that in there on many, many levels, it's really important to take that in because you're actually not losing anything by spending time reading the narratives. You're actually gaining a lot of depth by doing that, and you'll retain the information better.
1,000%. Yeah, that's really insightful. That's absolutely true. Do you have any other people you really look up to or that you would consider mentors along the way?
Yeah, I mean, when I was, you know, coming back from college and I decided to do music full time, that is what I did. I did music and I was, you know, struggling at first to make ends meet with it. But at the same time, I wanted to get better at these skills, especially foraging, but also like just knowing the land and being able to communicate with it and, you know, being a part of it. So I ended up going to the school and living there for a year. It's called Hawk Circle Wilderness School. That's in Cherry Valley. And
you've been to all the wilderness schools then?
What's that?
You've been to like all the wilderness schools? You just like name drop three in this episode.
Well, I mean, I would say all of them, but this one was close to my heart because it was where I lived. It was in the area that I lived, and it was a big deal for me because I made this commitment that I was going to live at this school, which was like an immersion program of wilderness skills, and that's all I was going to do for a year, you know, and that's what I did. It's all I did. It's awesome. 2007. And I took a survival trek out after I did that course. And I went out for 24 days and I had like, you know, this amazing, very difficult, but amazing survival trek that shaped a lot of how I feel about nature and my approach to learning this stuff. So my mentor was that land and those instructors there, which are not, those instructors that were there at the time were not well known, but it did sort of give sort of birth to some other characters that came out of that school too. Like there's this guy, truly inspiring. If you haven't seen this guy's book, his name is Akiva Silver. And he wrote this book called Trees of Power, and he's a friend of Sam's. In fact, Sam does the foreword in his book. That's awesome. And he talks about like 10 trees that you want a part of your life. And a lot of things are paralleled with Akiva and myself. We both went to the same, we both like started out with Tom Brown. We both ended up at this Hawk Circle school. I didn't know him until recently, actually, but he lives in New York now. He lives a little bit further than I do, a few hours, but the chapters on the book, now it's only 10 trees covered in this book, but they are lovingly covered and just so full of inspiration. I'd highly recommend it. It's an amazing book called Trees of Power. I love his stuff. I like Arthur Haynes a lot. I met him once at the foraging fest in Wisconsin. I think he's got a lot of valuable things to teach, and the way that he teaches is very, very much from a botanist point of view, but also has a sort of an indigenous kind of lean towards what he teaches as well. So I like him. Who else? I love Daniel Vitalis has some. I mean, I've been following his podcast and his work for a while. I love what he's done. And yeah, there's a lot of great resources out there. Alan Burgo, the forager chef, I think he's excellent. He's very inspiring in terms of if you're going to cook this stuff and what to do with it. I consult his stuff a lot. So yeah, those are just a few of the people.
Those are some great names, man. Great suggestions.
Yeah.
I'm unfamiliar with Akiva Silver, but I just downloaded the book, so I'll let you know how that is.
Yeah. Let me know what you think. I honestly, man, I read the book. I was in tears just reading that. He touches on some heavy things, and he's such a humble guy. He's such a humble guy, but he knows so much. He really does, because he's lived it. Hmm. I have to mention this other guy too, who he's, if nothing else, he is such a sweet person. But on top of that, he knows a lot, and that would be Adam Harrison. Do you know Adam?
Oh, I love Adam. We've never met personally, but I love his content. What's his thing called? He's not online as Adam Harrington. It's Learn Your Land.
Yeah, Learn Your Land. LearnYourLand.com. And he has two, currently, I think he's working on another one, but he has two excellent video courses. One on mushrooms and one on trees, and I've taken them both. They're excellent, like top tier stuff.
That's awesome.
I would totally encourage people to get involved in that if you can.
Yeah, some people, if they've been to the Midwest Wild Harvest Festival, I believe he taught there or was a guest speaker there a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I wasn't there. I wasn't able to meet him.
I also think if you've YouTubed any foraging things,
oh sure,
you've for sure seen him.
Oh my gosh, yes, he was one of the first main online foragers. Whenever I was trying to beef up my knowledge on mushrooms, it was Adam's videos all the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are some great suggestions, Sean. Thank you.
Totally.
It's really interesting to hear or talk to somebody with as much of a wilderness background, I guess. I think you're the first forager we've spoken to so far that has had such a lengthy education, or just you've really kind of struck your path in not necessarily the traditional academic sense, but going to these alternative schools, being a professional musician, with that kind of time available to you to just invest a little bit more of your life into nature than maybe some other people. It's pretty inspiring.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I think that the music, that lifestyle really opened up. It opens up these chunks of time that I can just dedicate towards, exploring nature, because just the nature of the business, you're really, really busy and then you're not, and so I try to, soak that up as much as I can and really take advantage of it. And, it works with my personality and the things I want out of this life. It's definitely benefited me in a lot of ways, so I'm thankful for it.
Has anyone ever asked more details about your 24-day foraging trek that you took? I mean, I'm guessing you were naked and afraid.
I was. I had the clothes that I had on my back, but that was it. And it wasn't totally. I had some controls on it. For one thing, I was only about 15-minute walk from the main camp where the school was. So the school was situated on 200 acres of forest and wetland and all that. So it's like, if something really bad happened, I suppose, you know, I wasn't far from them. So I could call for help or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of, there was a lot of elements to it that were very much like self-imposed, but challenging at the same time, you know, for one thing, like finding your own water source, you know, digging into the, you know, the mountain spring to, you know, find your own water and build your own shelter and, you know, without anything, just whatever you find. That's, you know, awesome. And, you know, finding your own food, like, you know, that was a challenge, and making your whatever you need, you know, fire materials, you know, all of that stuff. So for one person, it's a lot to do. It's not normal. It's completely self-imposed, but you know, you by nature of what you're doing, you're going to be learning a ton of things, about yourself and about, you know, just life, you know, in general.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fascinating, man. As soon as you said I took a 24-day like trek, I was like, this is what I want more of. Give me more of that.
Yeah, it was like, I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, it'd be hard to do now.
Sure.
Because this is back, and I wasn't like a spring chicken then either. I mean, I was probably 31, but you know, I'm 48 now. I'm going to be 49 this year, you know, so it's like, well, no, I'm not. I'm going to be 49 next year, and that's not what works. But I, you know, I feel like I would be hesitant to do something like that now for so long. Plus I have my son and all that. I had less responsibility then, but if you are young, you know what I mean? You can do even like a week, man, you know, just get out there and just shut everything off just see what it feels like to be like detached from all your modern devices and everything, like places you have to be in your, it's such a weird feeling. I mean, it's such a weird feeling. I mean, back then when I did it, it wasn't like, you know, we weren't at the level with technology that we're at now, and our dependency on it is in terms of our smartphones and everything, but still it was like, to unplug in that way is, it's a little intimidating, even for somebody who's like, you know, close to nature, so to speak, you know, when you tap into the feeling of like, this was how everybody lived, man. You know what I mean? This is like, how close to nature everybody was at one point, no matter where you are in the world, you know? So the feeling was like a feeling of like sort of intimidating, but also like a feeling of coming home in a way, you know? So I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. It sounds absolutely fascinating. If you ever wrote a memoir, I would read the shit out of it, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I had a journal for that whole trip, but
there you go.
half of the journal is gone because it ended up out in the rain there. Got my notebooks out swamped, but I have half of it.
Very cool.
Still intact.
The latter half, probably, like the more insightful half.
We would hope so.
Or deranged half, right, depending on your situation. I think that's a great great place to leave the episode. I was curious if you have any more gigs like at the end of this year or in January that you want to plug. We'll probably release this episode before Christmas.
Folks can go to seanrau.net to find out information about shows, but I won't be touring until the spring, and at that point I'm not exactly sure where I'll be, but I do a lot of West Coast stuff. I definitely come out to Chicago.
Sweet.
I do Midwest and all that. So it will probably be a Midwest kind of a Midwest to West Coast kind of a thing in the spring. That's what I'm looking at.
Nice. Well, I hope it's, you break a leg, and then in foraging, I wish you good luck. And it's been awesome to chat with you, man. It was really cool meeting you at the Midwest Wild Harvest Festival. You seem like a really awesome dude, and I hope we run into each other again. I had one last question.
Yeah, sure.
And I can't remember.
It's somewhere in there. Come on, keep looking.
In there.
Dig that sucker out.
You can find him online at Can I Eat This Sean on Instagram.
He's got really cool merch.
Super cool merch on sale. Mm-hmm. Do you do any education, or you just do any in-person education?
Yeah, that's one of the things. One of the things I am going to be doing more of this season too is doing workshops. So foraging workshops starting in the spring and going through the entire season, basically until November of next year. So that will be everything is sort of like the hub would be seanrau.net. You'll see it on the Instagram too posted, but most of the workshops are going to be, you know, it'll all be up on the website.
Amazing.
Excellent.
Looking forward to the next season, and hope you have a great winter. Much love, Sean.
All right, man. Thanks again for having me. And I'll talk to you guys soon.
Talk to you soon.
Count on it. Bye. Sean.
That was so cool. That dude is so knowledgeable.
Yeah.
So overwhelmingly fucking awesome.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
Now I have to look up all of those schools.
I know, right? Yeah, he was just name dropping one after one after another. I felt it was a dumb joke I made that he'd been to all of them, but it's like I haven't even heard of that many schools.
It's probably all of them.
It's probably
come on,
there's
John.
There's only gotta be like two.
Don't
more.
Be modest. Yeah.
But yeah, I hear. I mean, it's cool. I didn't even until this chat. I guess I didn't even realize he lived up in New York. I met him at the Great Lakes Foragers Gathering, or no, the Midwest Harvest in Wisconsin. So he made quite the trek to be out there, but I guess that's nothing to a touring man.
Yeah, I guess. It's that small potatoes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, damn. I'm going to have to listen to much more of his music.
Definitely have to check that out.
Yeah.
Definitely am all about his content that he puts out. What a guy.
Yeah, definitely check out his Instagram, guys. If you don't already follow him at Can I Eat This Sean, I hope he continues his musician series next year. I thought that was really, really fun. Like I said, I really enjoyed the Nanny Berry episode. But this Walnut series he's doing right now is just like very good, very cool. And he's kind of a sleeper forager out there. He's got less than 2,000 followers. So definitely give him a follow and share his stuff. He's really cool.
Totally worth it. He's going to release those secret memoirs someday. I know it. I can tell.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that he mentioned Daniel Vitalis. I always love being reminded of the second best foraging podcast out there.
Former.
Yeah, that's right. He's not even in the game anymore.
We're just kidding. Nah. I love you, Daniel.
Yeah. Anyway, much love to Sean. It was really cool to chat with him. Steve, much love to you.
Oh man, I missed you. It had been a couple weeks.
Missed you. Yeah, we banked a couple episodes, and we're releasing them out as we go. But we got lots of really cool guests on our way coming. It's winter. I mean,
we also got lots of hot sauce. It's cold outside. We'll keep you warm. You know,
buy the freaking hot sauce. It's so good. No, it really is.
I'm going through so much of it. I put that shit on everything.
Me too. It's really good. You can't compare it to the spring one because it's different.
It's different.
But we'll release. We already did that episode where we talked about it.
That's awesome.
Listen to the last episode where the grab bag episode. We open up some mail, test some hot sauce, talk about our shirts. I'll repeat to try to remember this every episode. If you guys want some free stickers, some free merch from us, give us a 5-star review. And then screenshot it and email us at wildedibleworldpod@gmail.com and with your address, and we will send you free stickers. It's that easy. And it helps us a lot. I'm sure everybody does the rigmarole and like, you know, like smash, yeah, smash
give
that
us,
subscribe
give us
button.
5 stars.
Yeah, 5-star review. But it really does make a huge difference, reaching new people and helping our show grow and be able to do cool stuff like go on tour or.
Plus, we're super nice.
Plus,
so be nice to us.
It's super, super nice. The show is free.
Yeah, it's super free.
Super free. It's the least you can do. Anyway, now that the business...
It's been fun hanging out.
Yeah, it's been super fun talking business with y'all. But, yeah, see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Oh, hey, Steve.
Oh, hey, Mike.
Well, what's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just got this new water bottle, but it just looks so plain.
Well, have I got the store for you. Introducing the Wild Edible World Podcast Merch Store.
Wowie wow!
It's the merch store where you can get all of your favorite podcasts merch for all your decorating purposes.
How do I find that?
Go to wildediblewworldpod.shopify.com. Or go to any of our Instagram and media accounts and view the link in the bio.
Wowie wow!